So good morning, everyone. We're going to get started. We're missing at least one member. The second member, one is sick and not going to be here, and we're waiting to see if co-chair Cruz will, or vice chair, excuse me, will be here. So I'm going to go ahead and start with the public hearings and possible work sessions. We're going to start with House Bill 4073. And Whitney, I believe this is yours.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. This is House Bill 4073 and is brought to us today by Representative Greenlick. There is no revenue or fiscal impact. House Bill 4073 amends existing law to allow secular organizations or officiants of secular organizations to solemnize marriage. There is also a dash 2 amendment brought to us by the Senate Judiciary Committee that adds current members of the Legislative Assembly to those who are able to solemnize marriages.
All right, thank you. And I know that we have both Representative Greenlick and Senator Steinward Hayward. Why don't y'all go ahead and come on up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mitch Greenlick, State Representative from House District 33, Portland, and half of my Senator's district. So here's the story. If a person wants to get married, a couple want to get married, they go down and get a marriage certificate. And then they go get married. And somebody who officiates at that wedding, or some other person, signs their marriage license solemnizing the marriage, meaning certifying that the people really did get married. Right now, that solemnization can be done by a clergyman, by a judge, or by a county clerk. What this bill does is it adds another category, and if amended, two categories to people who can solemnize a marriage. One category would be officials of secular organizations, organizations that serve similar functions to religious organizations, but are for people who perceive themselves as not being religious. The amendment would add members of the legislature to that. When the bill came over last year to the Senate, it had that as a part of it, and I understand there's an interest in adding members of the legislature back into it. I have no problem with that. In fact, in the original version of the bill, the very original one, we had the married couple having the ability to solemnize their own marriage. That went out very early in the process. We perceive this bill as a, and you'll hear some testimony on it, but we perceive the bill as a matter of fairness. Oregon has a relatively large proportion of people who don't perceive themselves as being religious. When asked by Gallup, you consider yourself very religious, some are religious, or not religious at all. 43% of Oregonians reported themselves as not religious. There are only 4 states in the country with a higher proportion than that: Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and Massachusetts. But we perceive this as the opportunity for those people to have members of their own community solemnize their marriage, and we would hope you would see it the same way.
The 4127.
Thank you, Representative Greenlick. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senator for District 17, and privileged to sit here with one of my two wonderful representatives in support of this bill. About a year ago, one of my high school classmates decided, and she and her longtime partner decided that they were going to get married. And I've been friends with this woman since we were 15. And I've participated in a lot of her major life events. And she and her partner asked me to officiate their wedding. And I was extraordinarily honored by that. But I was stuck because I'm a person of very deep faith, as I think many of you know. I'm Jewish. My faith is very important to me. And I have enormous respect for other people's faiths. But the only way that I could officiate and solemnize their wedding and serve as that person who solemnizes it was to be ordained in the Universal Life Church, which lots of people do, and I ended up doing after consultation with my rabbi, because I have to tell you, it felt a little weird to be ordained in somebody else's church when I identify pretty strongly. I'm not one of the unchurched in Oregon. I am solidly churched, as it were, or synagogued, depending on how you want to put it. And I have enormous respect for people who have institutions that have significant meaning in their lives but don't fall under the traditional definitions of religions. I also believe firmly that as elected legislators who write this to help write the statutes and uphold the statutes, that we should have the opportunity as legislators to solemnize marriages as well. I think this should probably only apply to legislators who are currently holding office, not a permanent opportunity. But I think people should have the right to have their community of choice be significantly engaged in their wedding ceremonies and serve as not only the officiant but also the solemnizer of their marriages. It's a matter of equity. It's not a matter of who's getting married. It's a matter of who's performing the wedding ceremony and who's solemnizing it. It's a simple matter of equity. It's expensive sometimes for judges to do this. Lots of times it's much less expensive to get married by clergy. So to some extent, it's discriminatory. And if we allow people from secular organizations that are significant in people's lives in the way that for those of us who are people of faith, our religious communities are significant in our lives, this will offer opportunities to people that are not currently available to them and that I believe should be under Oregon statute. And I urge your support of this bill. Thank you so much for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you. First question is Senator Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a question and a comment on this issue. I had a constituent that was pleased to see this bill coming over. She had actually come to see me about marriage solemnization. So I asked her if this bill would fit her needs, and it doesn't completely solve her problem. This is her issue. She says, the issue I keep running into is the marriage license, where it requires a current address for the authorizing congregation. The congregation that ordained me no longer exists, but my ordination is still valid. And so there's no real way that makes sense or is needed in Baptist polity for me to be authorized elsewhere. And then she says, I think by requiring that the congregation still exists, the government is actually infringing on religious rights by defining what is or isn't a valid authorization. In Baptist life, that's ordination, and it's conferred once and for all by a single congregation, and it continues whether the congregation exists or not. So I'm wondering if you would be willing to entertain a friendly amendment that would say that the license application can't require the name of that authorizing congregation. The other thing that she pointed out was, as a person that spent years going to seminary, that it is frustrating to her that anyone, and I too have become ordained in the Universal Life Church so that I could marry some people, that it's very frustrating to see that. You know, we don't do that for PhDs or anything else, and a religious degree is a degree that's hard fought and hard earned.
Well, the relating to those are related to the solemnization of marriage. I would have no problem with that, but you'd have to ask whether that relates to the marriage certificate or the solemnization question. I mean, you'd have to ask the RLC. Right?
And I think it is, because when you fill out that form that says,
yes,
I am authorized to solemnize, that's how you demonstrate your qualification to solemnize.
And it's the finest congregation, and I have no problem with that.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Gelser, thank you for that point. And it's actually interesting because, as you will remember from when you did this, Senator, the Universal Life Church, in which we are both ordained clergy now, which I agree makes me feel very uneasy, because I have enormous respect for people who went through the long process of becoming ordained clergy in established religious traditions. That takes a lot of study and a lot of work and a lot of commitment, and it feels... As I said, I felt uneasy about it for a whole host of reasons, as I imagine you might have as well, although I don't want to infer anything.
You can infer, yes.
But that church, the Universal Life Church, does have a specific place on its website to say, for those of you in Oregon who are trying to deal with this, here's the address to use as the ordaining congregation, because it's not the address for the rest of it. And it feels very odd, and I certainly would be very supportive of that change as well for exactly that reason.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for the panel? Thank you all very much for coming forward. So it sounds like maybe with this friendly amendment, we're going to need a little bit more time. We got plenty of time to do everything.
Will you put that forward?
Yeah, I'll work with somebody.
Yeah. Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
All right, thank you. So before I take the rest of the testimony on this bill, which is 4073, let me ask Representative Vega Peterson. I know that you're here to give testimony on 4127. Would you prefer us to open up that one and give your testimony so you may be able to get back to whatever you need to do? Or okay. Then let's go ahead and finish up the other two individuals I have listed who want to testify on House Bill 4073 is Brian Harvey and Kimberly McCullough. Why don't you two come up? And while they're coming up, I'm just going to go ahead and put on the record House Bill 4044 will be carried over until tomorrow. House Bill 4044 will not be put into a work session today, but the work session will carry over till tomorrow. So with that, we're going to continue with our public hearing on House Bill 4073. And Brian, Kimberly, who's going to go first?
What's that?
Who would like to go first?
Brian,
thank you.
All right. Thank you, Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee. My name is Brian Harvey. I'm here on behalf of the Secular Coalition for Oregon, which represents 16 nonprofit organizations from across the state. These organizations identify as humanist organizations, as secularist organizations, some as free thought organizations, and there are many such organizations in Oregon in addition to those that are represented in our coalition. And while secular in nature, these organizations provide a profound sense of community and belonging to their members in much the same way a religious congregation might. Many of these organizations logically also choose to train and certify celebrants or officiants so that for their members, occasions such as weddings and funerals can be marked by expressions and ceremonies appropriate to their beliefs. Currently, however, the celebrants from these secular organizations, as you've already heard in testimony, cannot legally marry couples in Oregon without gaining additional certification from a religious congregation or organization. And this places Oregonians who are members of these secular communities at a disadvantage. Couples who desire to have their wedding officiated by a celebrant from a secular organization, someone who they know personally, who shares their worldview and philosophy on love, marriage, and life, cannot be legally married by that officiant, and instead are often have to be married by a county clerk or judge and pay an extra fee. The current law also, to us, signals to secular Oregonians that they cannot always expect equal treatment under the law. Lutherans and any or religious tradition of which there are many adherents in Oregon can solemnize their marriage in public ceremonies that are conducted by people who share their fundamental beliefs, but humanists can't. So many people in these organizations are unwilling to pretend to be something they aren't, or to pretend to believe something they don't, and secular humanists in Oregon are shut out as long as they are sincere in following an ethical system that does not worship any god, adopt any theology, or accept a religious label. This bill would signal to secular Oregonians that they are full and equal citizens, and it will grant countless people equal access to their constitutional right to marry. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak for you today, and certainly if you have any questions.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and take Kimberly's testimony, and then we'll see if there's questions.
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. My name is Kimberly McCullough. I'm here on behalf of the ACLU of Oregon. I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 4073 because it does something that's just very, very simple. It creates equality in our laws in a very small but significant context. The truth is that this equality is demanded by the First Amendment and by our Oregon Constitution. Something that people often don't realize is that the Oregon Constitution actually offers stronger protections in this area than the federal Constitution. Our founders were actually so concerned about freedom of religion and the lack of establishment of religion by government that there are five separate sections in the Oregon Constitution that relate to religion. And if you look back at the discussions that they had when they adopted the Oregon Constitution, there was a lot of talk about not only wanting to protect the rights of religions to be free from persecution and so on, but also the rights of non-believers and of creating a system that had equality for believers and non-believers. And they actually used the phrase "the rights of conscience" in our state constitution to explain that. One of the beautiful things about our country and about our state is the diversity of belief and equality afforded to the diversity of belief in our constitutions. Each of us has our own belief systems, and when those beliefs are sincerely held and when we organize with others, because they share those sincerely held beliefs, our laws are supposed to be, they're supposed to treat us equal. But our laws in Oregon right now that say who can and can't marry are just currently unequal in this context, and you can change that. I'd just like to emphasize that the reason that this is so important is that it affects people in a moment of their lives that is incredibly special and important to them. And if they belong to one of these organizations, it means a lot to these people to be able to be married by someone who has been authorized by the organization that they belong to. And I just want to address one point that was raised on the House side, which is, you know, why don't people go ahead and do what Senator Gelser and what Senator Steiner Hayward talked about, which is join the Universal Life Church. And I think the argument was raised on the House side of, well, you know, this Universal Life Church has symbols on its website that has like an atheist symbol and symbols for all sorts of different things. And so, you know, people can just fit into that and join the Universal Life Church. And I think that's problematic for two reasons. One is, if you consider the Universal Life Church to be a real and true church, you're saying that someone has to join and belong to a church that they don't believe in order to solemnize a marriage. And if you see it as what a lot of people see it as, which is sort of a sham church or something that's just been set up to make people be able to perform marriages, I don't know that that's a really great way for us to be organizing our laws, is say, okay, well, we're not going to create an avenue for you that's legitimate. We're going to force you to go through this sort of illegitimate sham religion. I'd just like to address one additional thing, which is something that this bill doesn't do, but that we considered. And we decided not to do this because of the fact that it's a short session. And we decided that we just wanted to bite off something that was very simple and small for the legislature. But we did consider adding a provision that would have allowed the state to deputize people for a day. In California, if you have, you know, your father wants to marry you or your best friend or someone that you look up to, you can just get deputized for a single day. We decided not to include that because we thought that it would add complication and it's a much larger question. But ultimately, it may be something that this legislature wants to consider. So, thank you.
Questions for either one on the panel? Senator Thatcher?
I have a question. I'm not sure if you're able to answer it or not, but I was just thinking previous testimony, and I'm honestly not, I don't remember how all the, you know, the paperwork went, but somebody signs the certificate saying it has been solemnized. Mm-hmm. Can we just, I mean, thrown it out there, a notary, you know, it seems like notaries attest to actions taken. And I mean, then you could pretty much have it done by anybody as long as you have a certified notary signing it.
I mean, Senator Thatcher, Chair Przanski, I think that the state has some leeway in how they decide that these things happen. And so it is possible that, you know, I don't know about any other states that simply require a notary in any of my research, but yeah. Certainly if the state wanted to, they could say notaries are the people who solemnize a marriage.
Well, I think that's the question.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that necessarily what okay. Senator Thatcher was saying. I was wondering for clarification, were you thinking having a notary being able to do the marriage or having someone else be able to do the marriage in front of a notary or with the notary present to say that occurred? That's what I'm
One of those. Yeah, it just occurred to me. Anyway, I was also wondering about secular organization. I guess I that's very loosely defined, I take it, because anybody, like somebody could belong to the Oregon Symphony Orchestra, perhaps, and want somebody from the flute section to, you know, solemnize because that's their life.
Senator Thatcher and Chair Przanski, that actually is a question that was raised last session when this came up, and I think it was Senator Farioli who said, well, can the League of Women Voters now authorize people to solemnize marriage? And if you look at the bill as it's drafted now, we actually tried to very carefully craft the definition of secular organization to avoid that that sort of broad definition of secular, which is basically like everything. So it specifically says that secular organization for the purpose of the statute is an organization that plays a parallel role in the individual's life as a religion does to a religious person. So that wouldn't be the Oregon Symphony. That doesn't play that sort of parallel role in people's lives. Yeah, it's narrow. It has to do with your shared values, your shared ethics, your shared morals.
I hate to say this, but gangs play a big part in people's lives too. I just, you know, those service family, those are very important to them, and I guess that could qualify. I don't know.
I have to look at the definition. I mean, I'm not sure if it would. I haven't looked at the breadth of the definition, but my quick reading of the bill gave me the impression that there was narrowing who would qualify as a secular organization, and it's not just someone claiming to be. Mm-hmm. There's actually a test that the state would be applying.
Okay, because yeah. I'm just reading the language. It says means an organization that occupies a place in the lives of the organization's members parallel to that filled by a church or particular religious authority. Who's to be the judge of that?
So, Senator Thatcher, Chair Przanski, the answer to that question is actually that the language that we took was specifically from a Seventh Circuit case that analyzed this issue. It actually was striking down a similar law in a different state where they didn't allow secular organizations to solemnize marriage. And in that state, the Seventh Circuit struck that law down and said that the law actually has to apply and afford those same rights to these secular organizations. That court has a very long description of how they analyze whether or not an organization plays a parallel role, and there's quite a bit of case law at the federal level as well that discusses this. A lot of it comes actually out of law around who could be a conscientious objector, and other case law in courts where they're discussing people's sincerely held beliefs. And so there are tests out there. We did take this from a court case that analyzes that. So I don't think it's going to apply to just any old organization or grouping of people.
All right. All right. Thank you all very much. I'm going to ask if there's anyone else who wanted to give testimony on House Bill 4073. Not seeing any. We're going to go ahead and close the public hearing. This bill, if I remember correctly, postings are required by tomorrow, so this will get reposted. We don't need to worry about carrying it over. And with that, we're going to go ahead and open up our second hearing, which is going to be House Bill 4127. Whitney?
Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. This is House Bill 4127 and is brought to us today by Representative Vega Peterson. There is no revenue or fiscal impact. There are also no amendments. In Oregon and nationwide, couples of the same sex are entitled to marry to the same extent couples of the opposite sex are. House Bill 4127 establishes that it is the state policy that any privilege, immunity, right, benefit, or responsibility governed by law because of marriage to a person of the opposite sex applies with equal force to a person who is married to someone of the same sex. It also modifies statutes to contain general neutral language in relation to marriage. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Jessica, and then also Zagina. Why don't you go ahead and come on up? And while they're getting situated, is there anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 4127? Representative, do you want to kick us off?
Yes, thank you, Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jessica Vega Peterson. I'm the state representative in House District 47, which is in East Portland. Today I have the pleasure to bring you House Bill 4127. So this past June in 2015, the United States Supreme Court decision in Obergefell versus Hodges made marriage equality the law of the land, which meant in Oregon and across the nation, people have the freedom to marry the person that they love. What House Bill 4127 does is update Oregon statute to reflect this change, to add gender-neutral language in different parts of the statutes. Specifically, it does this in two statutes dealing with the Evidence Code, ORS 40.255, which deals with marital relationships and court proceedings, and ORS 40.135, which deals with presumptions in marriage. It updates the phrases husbands and wives to say two individuals in marriage, and that a spouse means an individual in a marriage with another individual. It also has a Section 3, which says that it's the policy of the state to confer the same rights, benefits, and responsibilities to people who are married, whether it's in same-sex marriage or different-sex marriage, for all statute, administrative, and court rules. This bill will have very real positive effects for couples and families in Oregon by assuring that our statutes are clear, specific, and in line with federal law. This bill passed both out of the House Judiciary Committee and the House floor with bipartisan support, and I urge this committee to vote aye on it and pass it along to the Senate floor for passage. Thanks very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions you have.
All right, and do you have time to have the other testimony before?
Yes.
Okay. So, Gina, why don't you give us your testimony?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thank you, Chair Przanski and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Gina Frizzini. I'm co-executive director of Basic Rights Oregon. We're the statewide advocacy group for leading for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Oregonians. You have my written testimony. It's very similar to what you've just presented. Thank you. So I won't repeat that. What I will add is that we're coming up on nearly 2 years of legal marriage for same-sex couples here in the state of Oregon since May of 2014, and of course followed by the federal court decision in 2015. There's been a lot of celebration, a lot of joy, and as has been true for other states that have extended the freedom to marry to same-sex couples through these important court decisions, we now must update and modernize our marriage statutes to reflect the reality in our state. We started this process with House Bill 2478 in 2015, and now, as we had agreed to, we're returning with the final updates to the marriage statutes. Every state has or will go through a process to update or modernize their marriage statutes to reflect the constitutional ruling, much as we're recommending here in Oregon. And so, as many other states have done before us, by recognizing and contending with this, the discrepancy that exists, we have outdated, unenforceable language in our state statutes that still define marriage as between a husband and a wife, and becomes quite confusing. So the changes that are reflected in this bill, it sounds dry, but it definitely will have positive effects. Just a real life example from the last couple of weeks, we had a colleague that worked for many years to secure the freedom to marry right here in the state of Oregon. She and her wife welcomed their second child, and the way in which the outdated statutes kind of flows through the life of same-sex couples is that as they celebrated the birth of their son, filled out paperwork, and received their birth certificate, she's listed as the father of the child, and they're now having to go through a whole update of the paperwork to reflect the truth of their family, which is that this is a child who is loved and welcomed by two mothers. This happens quite regularly, despite the fact that there have been changes that in the law that should be helping with that, but because the statutes across the board don't reflect the reality of our families, there continues to be confusion and mistakes. So we're hopeful that this bill will further help to resolve that, and urge your support for House Bill 4127. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Questions? I think that's it. Thank you all very much. And with that, since I'll just go ahead and ask once again, there is, I guess, one thing I am going to put on the record on this. It was interesting when I was looking at the statute, the term deporting is used, and that's basically where two people are basically holding themselves out to be married. And I was really curious about that because I believe our state does not have common law marriage, and I don't believe it has public declaration. But that's the part I'm going to just ask staff just to look at. I'm just curious as to whether, I know in the state of Texas that if two individuals represent themselves to be man and wife, such as individuals signing in at a hotel registry as man and wife, that's actually a public declaration that is acknowledged in Texas, which I just would caution young people as to thinking about what they're doing before they do it. So that's a little sidebar. Okay, with that,
Thank you.
We'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 4127. And our last of our public hearings for today is going to be on House Bill 4102A. And we're going to go ahead and open that one up. And Whitney, is that yours?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Przanski, members of the committee. This is House Bill 4102A, brought to us today by Representative Barton. There is no revenue or fiscal impact. In 2013, the Oregon Law Commission created a work group to conduct a review of the probate statutes. The review for Chapter 112 was already addressed in the 2015 session. House Bill 4102 corrects technical errors still contained in Chapter 112, and it also encompasses the work done by the Commission to modernize Chapter 111. There is also a -A3 amendment for your consideration brought to us by Representative Barton. This amendment contains some additional technical and modernization fixes. Thank you.
All right, thank you. So who's going to start?
I will. Thank you. Chair Przanski, Vice Chair Cruz, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Nita Kumar. I am a third-year law student at Willamette University College of Law. I am also an extern at the Oregon Law Commission this semester. After graduation, I plan on working in legislation for foster care reform and juvenile detention issues, and this externship has been an excellent opportunity to see your legislative process and to even participate. I'm going to give some brief background information about the Commission's Probate Modernization Work Group, the original project proposal that brings us before you today, and some of the changes made to Chapter 111. Then I will turn it over to Commission Chair Lane Shetterly. As Council has mentioned, the work group was created in 2013 to update and modernize the language in our Oregon Probate Code. The membership consists of 20 voting members, as well as many others signed on as interested persons. The workgroup membership represents a wide breadth of expertise in the field of probate. Last session, the workgroup did bring you Senate Bill 379, which made changes to Chapter 112, intestate succession and wills. House Bill 4102 focuses primarily on Chapter 111, definitions in particular, does make a few corrections to Senate Bill 379 and changes in 112, and also further clarifies the law. The work group has gone through a detailed review. To provide a few examples, the work group changed advancement to reflect the increased usage by practitioners in both testate and intestate situations. Descendant replaces the term issue because modern documents use the word descendant. However, issue is still defined in the definition section for older documents. For the definition of funeral, the work group discussed the fact that the memorial service tends to be included as opposed to just the disposition of bodies. As a final example, the definition of generation is being removed because the term is generally known, and the UPC, the Uniform Probate Code, also does not define the word. House Bill 4102 has been well vetted by practitioners and academics in the field. We feel that it's a good bill, and we respectfully request that you adopt the -A3 amendment and move the bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you. Lane?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. Lane Shetterly, I'm here today as chair of the Oregon Law Commission. I want to thank Anita for her lead-in. I'll be very brief, except just to confirm that this is Chapter 2 of a multi-year effort to update and modernize our Oregon probate code, dealing with the administration of estates and dealing with wills as well. I want to touch just on a couple of things with the first, the emergency clause, to explain what that is about. There is an emergency clause in the bill, but it actually only will affect, well, let me say, under the emergency clause, the bill becomes effective, of course, when signed, but by the terms of the bill, only sections 4 and 17 actually become effective immediately. The other sections are delayed until January 1st of next year. The reason we're making sections 4 and 17 effective immediately because they do clean up a couple of sections of Senate Bill 379 last session, and rather than have a gap of time without those cleanups in effect, we wanted to have those effective immediately when the bill is signed. On the A3 amendments, we've done two things. One, we have explicitly restored adopted children within the definition of descendant. It was never intended that adopted children be not be considered descendants for the purposes of inheritance. That was not the intent of the work group, but the drafting of the bill as it came out suggested that that might be the case, so we have just been explicit in adding adopted children back in as being included as descendants. And also the A3 amendments make Section 4 give you a temporary version of Section 4 effective for the remainder of this year, because Section 4 injected the word descendant, and the definition of descendant doesn't become effective until January 1 of next year. And so we wanted to make sure not to get out of sync with those changes. And so the temporary version of Section 4 is the same as the amended version of Section 4 in the original bill, except that we retain the word issue instead of descendant, because that word will remain in effect through this year. Very technical amendments. I also want to point out that we have a report that has been submitted to the Committee on OLIS. It's a Law Commission report, which will constitute legislative history for the bill. I want to thank Representative Barton for offering us this vehicle. I know in the short session, vehicles are difficult to come by, and Representative Barton was willing to make this bill available to us to advance this next step in the modernization effort for probate. And I want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for your entertaining this, and Chana for getting this scheduled on the one day this week that I was able to make any hearings over here. So I'm happy to answer any questions. Oh, and I also want to acknowledge Billis Sidlick, who is the legislative drafter assigned from LC to the work group. We have a very special relationship in the Oregon Law Commission between the work of the commission and LC, and it's very helpful with our LC drafters actually sitting in the work group meetings and participating so that the drafting can be done as the work group does its own work on bill projects. So I want to thank all those players, and I do commend the bill to you with the dash A3 amendments, and urge your support for a due pass recommendation. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Laura, are you going to be speaking too or not?
No, I'm just here to answer questions. For the record, Laura Hansel, Deputy Director of the Oregon Law Commission, if I can be of assistance.
All right, she'll be our lifeline.
Yes.
All right, any questions for anyone on the panel? All right, I want to thank you all very much for coming far. Nita, thank you very much. We wish you much success in your future endeavors.
Thank you, Chair Brzezinski.
Yep. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and just see if there's anyone else who wants to give testimony on House Bill 4102A. And I'm not seeing. We'll close the public hearing. Now, my understanding, we're going to be posting these. And are we ready for 40? Is 4102A ready?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to move this or do you want to wait?
That'd be fine.
All right. So I think we'll go ahead and open up the work session on House Bill 4102A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4102A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Amendments?
Oh,
there's
excuse
a dash
me.
Two, right?
Dash,
oh, I didn't.
Dash A3. It's a dash A3.
A3.
Okay. Mr. Chair, ignore everything I just said. Mr. Chair, I move the dash A3 amendment into House Bill 4102A.
Senator Cruz moves the dash A3 amendment into House Bill 4102A. Discussion. Objections? So ordered.
Do we have the paperwork on
that? And my understanding, we have everything.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 4102A as amended by the dash A3 amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz now moves House Bill 4102A as amended by the A3 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair, that this is a short session and we've already had Mr. Shetterly here twice. I wouldn't want to see a third time, so.
Well, I just want to say I'm for it, I think, after this little brief whatever you call it. I just want to make sure that we are not accidentally redefining something that may have had a different meet. I'll talk to them afterwards. I'll be a yes today, but I just want to say that there could be information that comes forward that changes my mind.
Well, if it changes your mind, let us know so we can figure out if we need to change our minds.
All right.
Thank you very much for the heads up. So is there any objection to the motion that we now have? So ordered. All right. And then we need a carrier? Mm-hmm. I guess the chair will be the carrier on this one, doing intestate and
thank you, Mr. Chair.
State and all that. All right. With that, we're going to go ahead and close the work session on House Bill 4102A. And at this point, I believe that concludes the work that we have. We will, as I stated, be carrying over the work session on House Bill 4044 till tomorrow, which is Thursday, February 18th. We will be posting for a future work session when we get the additional paperwork and other people in line, House Bill 4073, as well as House Bill 4127. And for the purposes of the votes that were taken today, Representative Rosenbaum was excused. Is there anything else we need to cover? Tomorrow, 8 o'clock. Yeah. Tomorrow's the early, 8 o'clock, please. So we'll see everyone, hopefully close to 8 o'clock. And we're adjourned. 8 o'clock. And we're adjourned. Close to.